Hello and welcome to Runway Girl Network in Conversation, a deep dive into aviation and the passenger experience. I'm RGN Deputy Editor John Walton, and today I'm in conversation with Joanna Bailey and Thomas Boone from Simple Flying, as we compare and contrast the new Airbus A350 business class seats from British Airways and Virgin Atlantic. But first, thanks to our sponsor. In Conversation is brought to you by Bolteron, a Simona company, purveyor of high-performance thermoplastics for tomorrow's aircraft interiors. With new and groundbreaking innovations in design capabilities, Bolteron offers airlines the ability to customize the cabin with lightweight materials with metallic effects, translucent decorative panels with unique embedded patterns, dynamic textures, vibrant pearlescence, and much more. Learn more at boltaron.com. Now, Joe, Tom, welcome to In Conversation.
Hello.
Thanks for having me.
Delight to have you here. Now, when it comes to business class, British Airways and Virgin Atlantic have been real innovators in their time. So Virgin had the first angled lie-flat business class seat, the J2000, in 1999. BA followed swiftly with the first fully flat seat, the Club World product, which its manufacturer, Contour, which is now Safran Seats, called the Mohawk, that's the one with the flappy fan, which it later evolved into the current product, or I guess the previous product, that forwards-backwards one with the translucent divider. Manufactured by Collins, previously BE Aerospace, and they've been refreshing that slightly over the last decade and a half, basically. But now we've got new seats on new planes. So BA has the Collins Aerospace Super Diamond with a door, and Virgin has the Safran Cirrus NG. These are both outward-facing herringbones. Now, Virgin's, of course, is a double outward-facing herringbone. The centre seats point towards the windows, as do the outboard seats, whereas BA's centre seats point together. Joe, you're the Virgin Atlantic expert here. What's your take on this? How much of a change is it for Virgin Atlantic?
Well, I think it's a massive improvement, John, to be honest. It's, the old configuration where you had kind of the seats facing into the middle, you know, that wasn't popular with passengers. It wasn't very private, didn't offer a lot of space. It was comfortable, but in terms of kind of modern day requirements for privacy and you know, a bit of personal space, I think the new product really sets the bar a bit higher.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you and I both flew on it on a on special media flight that Virgin put on.
We did.
How did you find the seat when you were on the plane?
Honestly, I was completely comfortable. I mean, you know, I'm not a large lady. I'm only 5'4", but I found it super comfortable. I had a lovely sleep on the way back from America. There were a few niggles, which I'm sure we're going to get into shortly. But how did you find it yourself, John?
Well, look, I really liked it. I am a large lady, as it were. So I'm 6'3" or 1.90 meters in metric money. And one of the things I was worried about is with the newer generation of seats, and there's often a bit of constraint there. So those old seats did, of course, have their flaws, one of which was they all pointed towards the aisle. So you were sort of, you know, kind of looking over the edge of the seat at whoever was sort of facing you. But what they didn't have was any constriction around the feet and ankles. And they were nice and wide at the shoulders as well. And I was delighted to see that this seat was equally as good, and not just in the front row. So Virgin Atlantic were very clever. They put me in the front row, which has a bit more space on the way out. But I actually swapped with one of our mutual friends on the way back, just so I could have a sleep in the smallest one, just to see what that was like. And I was super impressed. I found there was a lot of space at the knees. I found that I could sleep on my side or on my back or even on my front, which is very unusual in business class, because I end up sleeping, you know, with my elbows out and my head on my hands kind of thing. And also I particularly thought that the amount of cushioning in sleeping mode was very comfortable. Virgin also has a little bit of mattress pad. And
although a massage pad would be lovely, I don't know why they don't do that.
Absolutely. Note to self, airlines. but they've got a bit of a mattress pad, which is a plus. But I actually wasn't expecting the new seat to be as comfortable for sleeping as the old one. That old one I always thought was great. I did that straight through London to Auckland once. I thought it was a great seat for sleeping. So I'm delighted to see the new one is as good. I wasn't, however, as persuaded, Tom, and I don't know what your thoughts here. I wasn't as persuaded by the sleeping part of the BA seat. I found that a bit constricted around the ankles and around the knees, particularly with the table, and also just the general shape of the seat without any of the space carve-outs that some of those earlier models of Super Diamond, even on the A350 had, like that Qatar Airways seat.
I think it's a really interesting point that you've raised about the knee room, because when I was on the media flight for the British Airways A350, the cabin crew made a point of telling me that they've intentionally placed the table high so that you can roll over without knocking against parts of the chair and disturbing your sleep. And I mean, when I laid in it, I didn't find I had a problem, but then again, whereas you guys were put up for the overnight flight, BA operated the flight to Madrid, so I haven't had the chance to have the full sleep yet.
Yeah, I went to and from Toronto, and yeah, I was actually quite surprised. You know, there's a metal lip on the table that faces you, and I definitely felt my shorts clad leg brushing up against that cold metal lip. And I think there was also a thing, I could sleep on my side in one direction, but not the other.
Yeah, I think it's very much, I think the way it's designed, it kind of leads you to sleep facing outwards, away from the side, towards the door, because that just seems a little bit more spacious with the armrest that drops down.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what was really interesting to me is that there's a huge improvement between that and the previous seat, of course.
For sure.
Right. I mean, that previous seat, you know,
needed a refresh.
Oh, God, absolutely. I mean, that thing is best part of, well, depending on where you start from, it's between, you know, 13 to 18 years old kind of thing. So, you know, a huge improvement for British Airways, don't get me wrong. But there were a few things like that. I really liked the table, for example. I liked how that comes down in that usual Super Diamond way. But on my return flight, the retaining latch didn't click in. So you had to sort of, you had to have it all the way down, or it clicked back. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they change that.
I think there's been a couple of teething problems on it. I heard most recently, actually, that the door handles will be replaced.
Yes, well, this is one of those deeply nerdy things that I'm really enjoying following, is how the certification for these new Dord mini suites is changing. Yeah. So one of the things that you have to have when you have one of these Dord mini suites, in other words, a business class style suite rather than a first class style suite with the double doors. So one of the things you have to have is a secondary exit mechanism of some form. So on the Qatar Airways Q suite, which was the first one of these, that is a pull-out door, right? So basically there's a handle, an emergency little latch behind the handle, and you pull out the door panel, throw the door panel behind you, and you walk out through the door when it's stuck in closed position. This one is actually very interesting, and I'd suggest that you, that any listeners who aren't familiar, do check out the article on Runway Girl Network. What happens is, normally the door just slides backwards and forwards, and you don't need to turn a handle or pull a switch or anything to make the door move backwards and forwards. It just slides. The problem is, basically at eye level, there is a big red handle, which too many people are assuming is a handle that they need to pull just to open the door, just to pop out to the loo or wherever. This is one of those unfortunate things that it looks like got too far down the proverbial rabbit hole of passenger experience before anyone tried it with real passengers, rather than either a bunch of airline reps or seat maker people or even frequent flyers. Right, I think that while a lot of airlines use frequent flyers as their test guinea pigs, I guess. Part of the problem with that is that those people really know how planes work and how the passenger experience on business class short work. And so they're like, oh, that is an emergency thing. I shouldn't pull it. So despite having double placards now that say in emergency only, the airline is indeed going to be working with Collins and one assumes Airbus and, of course, EASA to really have a go at seeing how they can make that a little bit less less prominent for everyday use. Because the problem is that when you pull that, the door... I'm not entirely sure how it works because for some reason they wouldn't let me take the seat apart to figure it out.
and Collins, do they know who you are?
The BA press team did tell them, so that's fair enough. There's some sort of mechanism where when you pull this handle, the door, it seems like it falls onto a second set of tracks or something. Or sort of falls free. And then there's a second handle, which is hidden quite a ways down and in, that pulls it back onto these tracks or reseats it somehow. The problem is that while that only takes, 15, 20 seconds, it's a bit of a faff. And these doors have to be locked. So at the moment, there's very much a series of announcements about, so that red handle, don't pull the red handle. The door does just slide. Please don't pull the red handle. If you do pull the red handle, please come and talk to us.
That's hilarious.
It's, I'm sure that normal humans, like people who are not us, they didn't realize that's the don't break the door spiel. it's interesting. And look, I mean, all credit to Collins. This is a mechanism that I spotted them looking at early this year on their new Element seat, which is the sort of next generation Super Diamond. They've been thinking about this methodology for quite some time. It will be interesting to see how that evolves. Now, speaking of things that needed some rework, Joe,
I knew you were going to bring this up.
Right.
They didn't think very hard about those tray tables, did they?
They did not. They did not. Now, Joe, do you want to explain how these tray tables work for people who haven't read either the Runway Girl piece or been on this aircraft?
Sure. So you've got this enormous tray table, which is great because you kind of need the big table to, it's a big solid table. You can do your work on it. They can lay it out all nicely for your dinner. The trouble is, it is just one solid piece. It slots into the back of the seat in front. And when you want to bring it down, you kind of press the button and down it comes. But it's absolutely enormous. And because of the lack of space, if you like, between the tray table and the seat, even the more slender of flyers will find that it's pressing against their tummy. If you like your food a bit like me and you have a little bumpy tummy, it actually doesn't fit. It just doesn't work. And if you're in anything but the most upright position in your seat, you've got no chance. I managed to get it down. I was sitting perfectly upright, which was fine for dinner. But, when you're kind of relaxing and maybe you want to, put your iPad on there or just have some bits in front of you, you really couldn't sort of lay the seat back or recline at all and still have the tray table there. It's just too big. So clearly they either tested it with some really small people who didn't really want to lay down, or they just failed to really put it to the test with real people at all, which seems like a bit of a gaffe on Virgin's part. But all credit to the Virgin team. They know that this is an issue. They've recognised from day one that this really wasn't working for everyone. And they're already in the process of retrofitting folding tables. So from what I understand, and you probably know more about this than I do, John, the new retrofitted tables will still slot into the back of the seat in front, but they'll come down in two parts, a bit like the tables in economy. So you can either have it fully unfolded for your dinner, or you can kind of fold it in half so that you can just have a small place to put your bits and pieces and still recline your table.
Yeah, so as I understand it, instead of this this large table, and it's a really big table, and that's great. But the problem is you don't really need a really big table because, even my massive 15-inch laptop fit on it with oodles of space to spare.
Yeah.
Virgin does a plated service, so you don't need the entire space for the Freddy trays, right? So this whole thing sort of pivots on its bottom edge down towards you and then slides sideways to rotate so that you're looking at it as you're in the herringbone angled seat. Yeah. Now, as I understand it, and I haven't seen any of the drawings, etc., for or any of the mock-ups for us, instead of the whole thing folding down, it'll be a half-size fold down. Right. And then, as I understand it, the half-size part will slide horizontally and then it'll unfold in the other direction so that you do get that extra space so that you can, you know, enjoy the thoroughly delightful, I have to say, afternoon tea service, yes, while not sort of sitting up prim and proper like Maggie Smith in Downton Abbey.
That's good. But it's a bit of a disaster for Virgin that it managed to make it onto the plane, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. I've got a lot of sympathy for Virgin, of course. You know, the lead time that you need to do in terms of getting seats on the plane, they chose this product before Safran, Zodiac as was, fell apart in terms of production quality, in terms of timing, in terms of design availability. So they had a choice to either stick with it or abandon ship. And they chose to stick with it. And, you know, I'm not sure I'd have made another decision other than that, even with all the benefit of hindsight. Now, what's very clear is that there's quite a bit of that seat that they have worked very hard on, Virgin, with Safran, to avoid the sort of situation that Cathay had with their Cirrus seats on the A350, where, you know, huge, huge problems around build quality, you know, bits of the seat falling off, trim that's being detached, lavatory walls held together with packing tape. So, you know, if you look very closely, you can see that Virgin has obviously had a set of fillers applied here. There are still problems. Some of the shrouding, for example, doesn't line up properly. So there's a very, very attractive orangey brown fabric shroud around the back of the seat, which does a pretty good job of cutting down some of the external noise when you're asleep. That should line up neatly, but it doesn't. So all in all, yes. Not, I'm sure, what Virgin wanted.
No.
But at the same time, not only are they fixing it, but also they figured out a soft product semi-fix for it. So what was interesting is the front row where I was on the way out, that table is another 6 inches or so further away from you. Ah. So I found that just fine. But in row two on the way back, it was just uncomfortable. You know, I didn't want my tummy being pressed on while I was trying to eat.
No.
So what I actually ended up doing was that the crew very cleverly set everything up on a little bit of side table, you know, that little bit of triangular side table that is the extension of the sort of foot box / cubby hole next to you.
Yeah.
And they served that very, very nicely and very, you know, low key, very easy on
which
there.
Very flexible of them, but, you know, in essence, they shouldn't have needed to in the first place. You know, they should have had a tray table that worked. Funny that you're mentioning the cubby, because that's literally the only bit of storage space on there. I'm supposed to be the Virgin cheerleader here. I don't know what I'm doing, but I did find that there was hardly any storage space on the seat. As much as the seat was comfortable, the screen was amazing. Where do I put my stuff?
And, oh, you've gone. Yeah. BA. The BA has so much storage space on their new seat, I didn't know what to do with it.
Well, yeah, but yes. And so I agree with both of you there. So on the Virgin seat, yeah, it's that was a bit of an oversight. I feel like I would probably have tried to somehow certify at least the more of the footwell area to put things, because there really is nowhere to store your stuff.
And it's very frustrating when the flight attendants come round before landing or just as you're taking off, and you have to put every single thing in the overhead locker. Everything, you know, you can hold on to a phone if you're very lucky, but your pillow, your bag, your iPod, your computer, everything has to go up the top, which is kind of inconvenient if you're just kind of relaxing. And, you know, in most other premium cabins, there would be somewhere to stash a few little bits and bobs, wouldn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. And And I think this is probably one of the problems with going with... So they're the first customer for the Sirius NG product. And I suspect that subsequent customers, they'll figure out some way to create extra storage. What somewhere that I think is an obvious answer to that is in that armrest that comes up and down.
Yeah.
Or even below the armrest that comes up and down, right? I've seen a lot of examples, including Virgin's old seat, where one of the storage spaces is inside the armrest, and that's sort of a natural not locking, but it's a hideaway, and it's a safe place when you're sleeping to put your wallet and your phone and your glasses and stuff.
Yeah.
Now on the BA side, Tom, yeah, I absolutely agree with you. BA has a great set of spaces to put things. So they've got the it's the usual super diamond double cubby.
Yeah.
Right. And the double cubby gives you, first of all, there's one that will fit your wallet and your glasses and your boarding pass and passport.
Yeah.
And the contents of your pockets, yeah, basically. And there's the other one, which is the charging, and it's got the chargers are in there. It's the remote for the IFE.
Yeah.
The headphone jacks, etc. It's the one with all the wires, yeah, poking out of it, basically. But what I found was interesting is, and I'm not sure whether they had this on the Madrid flights, that had to be completely, that had to be verified by a crew member that nothing was charging inside during,
yes,
takeoff or landing.
Yes, I had, every time something happened, they came around and they said, oh, sir, please unplug your thing. But they weren't checking inside. They saw that I still had the cable coming out. So whether you could have got away with it inside on that point, I don't know.
Yeah, no, they were on the way back from Toronto. They were literally saying, could you just pop that open so I can check it,
yeah,
please? And, you know, look, I am in favour of the plane not burning down because there's been some sort of surge and someone's phone has gone,
yeah,
up, right? Entirely in favour of safety.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was tricky. And what I did note, however, in terms of storage, is that both of these airlines kept the centre overhead bins. Now, this is an interesting and controversial thing, and I don't know where you guys sit. I am very much on team keep the centre bins. I don't find that the A350 or really any aircraft these days is so claustrophobic that I gain a huge amount by having this expansive centre,
yeah,
section with, you know, just a roof.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've got plenty of space still in the cabin with them there. And I mean, if you want to take a bag on with you that's not going to fit under the seat in front of you where the ottoman is, you need it. It doesn't hurt. In my opinion, it's not detrimental to the experience on the aircraft that they're there.
No, I agree, Tom.
Yeah.
It's I didn't even notice they were there, to be honest. But I think particularly on the A350 with the extra wide body, it's such a spacious feeling aircraft anyway, it wouldn't add anything to take them away. In fact, it would probably feel a bit weird, a bit like you're flying in some sort of church.
Yeah, and well, it's I see exactly what you mean, because there are a couple of airlines that have done that. And so part of the problem then is it actually gets quite echoey in there. And the other thing is that, okay, you've got, let's say each business class traveller comes with 1.5 bags, and we're being generous,
yeah,
here, right? It's going to be two. They're going to be the larger type of,
yeah,
bags. Know. You additionally have all of the airline bedding. You've got a pillow. You've got an amenity kit to throw up there. You might have a sleep set. Maybe you've brought an extra pair of shoes or something with you. Perhaps you pick up some duty free. It involves a bit of Tetris if you're trying to fit two people into one,
yeah,
bin. Whereas one person per bin is, you know, you're swimming in space, and that's,
yeah,
great.
You can never have too much storage on an airplane.
yeah, no, I agree. So I'm very much anti this this idea that we take the bins out of the center section, even with these new bigger bins on the new aircraft, I'm firmly there. So, Tom, what was your overall take on the BA seat? How did you find the CMF, so the colour materials and finish?
So, I mean, with the colour materials, there's a couple of sort of minor issues that I have overall with the seat, and they're sort of stuff that they're little niggles, you know, they're not like things that would make me say I'm not going to fly it. And I think one of those could be the colours, you know, it's very dark and grey, and I don't like the inside of the privacy door looks like it's just got carpet on it. And that to me was a bit weird.
Yeah, and it's not nice carpet. It's sort of industrial carpet that I remember from boarding school.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the stuff that it doesn't matter if the kids try and set it on fire kind of carpet.
Yeah, that's exactly it. But, I mean, that's sort of like the feet areas was quite grey, but then obviously you've got the white panels around elsewhere and the big windows bringing a lot of light, so... Overall, I think it's fine, you know. It's just other than a carpet on the door, but it's not. I mean, at the end of the day, if that's the difference between your flying club suite and somewhere else, then you know.
Yeah, I'm not gonna not fly it because I don't like the material on the door. But yeah. At the same time, you know, airlines and the supplier industry spend a huge amount of money on creating this experience. Yeah. And as part of the gestalt of flying British Airways rather than Virgin, it's in there. You know, if you come into the seat and you're like, oh, that looks beige and grey.
I think it's got a sort of very premium feel about it, you know, like having the black iPhone, for example. The it's not black, it's space grey. You know, that's kind of the feeling I get walking into the British Airways business class suite. It seems like quite a premium sort of colour set.
Yeah, so it does. I'm just not sure. I mean, look, BA doesn't really have a premium colour set itself.
Yeah.
Right. I think if you compare this to some of the other products, not necessarily the Virgin product, although I'm sure we'll talk about that in a minute. If you look at the difference between that and United Polaris, for example, with the set of premium materials there and the way that they used different textures and colors and types of material to break up that, you know, the tunnel of thermoplastic that you see. Same with the Delta One suite. Right. There's a whole bunch of different materials, different colors, different textures. It does feel premium, but in a very boring way. It doesn't feel like a Merc. It feels like a nice Ford Mondeo.
But that's British Airways all over, really, isn't it?
Well,
premium, but boring.
I mean, it does what it says on the tin. What more do you need?
Right. I mean, the problem is that the tin is now sort of 5,000-6,000 pounds. And I think that the people who are flying a business class are more likely to be expecting, certainly from the competition, you know, a bit of a car class upgrade, as it were.
Yeah.
Now, Joe, what did you think about the way the Virgin cabin looks?
Do you know what? I really liked it. It was light. It was bright. When you get on, they tend to set the mood lighting to sort of Virgin aubergine, which was a really nice touch, I thought. You know, it kind of made it a bit fun. Love the leather seats. They were really comfortable. Love the little accents of gold here and there. I think that gives it a really kind of fun and luxurious thing. The only bit I wasn't too sure about was the fabric that kind of goes around the back of the upper class pod. It's a woven fabric. And if you look at it closely, it's actually got all Virgin's colours in there and sort of the overall appearance is like a salmony pink, and it's just a bit, I think my grandma used to have a sofa in that colour when I was a little girl, and it was just a little bit like, oh, why did they choose that? But overall, I think it was lovely. There's lots of white, like I say, lots of gold. There's a real glass shelf in the little cubby. And the plastic panelling that you're kind of facing when you're sitting in the seat looks white, but if you look closely, it's actually like that sort of pearlescent white that they paint their planes in. So it's like, it's kind of in keeping with the livery of the aircraft as well, which I thought was a really nice touch. What did you think, John?
Oh, look, I really liked it. I thought it felt very Virgin. And here we have, you know, clear blue branding water between the two airlines, right? Virgin is probably more of an Italian luxury car, where, you know, yes, sometimes the basics aren't there, like it breaks down, but actually when it's good, it's amazing and it looks beautiful. You know, sometimes there are weird things like, you know, the handbrake is on the ceiling, and, you know, the thing to open the fueling tank is in the center console hidden behind a lever or something. But it does look amazing. Virgin did a great job in terms of their mood lighting, as you say, both in daytime and nighttime. Whereas BA didn't make much use of that at all. I love that, as you said, that sort of pearlescent mica kind of feel to the thermoplastics that you're basically staring at.
Yeah, that's it. It's not just white plastic. It's kind of interesting to look at, and it really reflects all the light from your nice big window as well, which I loved.
Exactly. Now, BA has done something slightly similar but different in a way. So that big curve of thermoplastic that you look at, they've textured that with that signature Rockwell Collins sort of ripple wave that's on the front panel in the cabin, but writ very small. And I thought that was a really nice touch to do that slightly differently. Now, let's talk about doors too. So at the main entrance door for the aircraft, British Airways has the club kitchen, which is essentially a medium grey thermoplastic wall with two fridges and a little display area, whereas Virgin have the loft, which is, I believe it's a 6 or 8 seater set of sofas with a great big window, not big, a great big screen. There's lots of, you know, some interesting roof texture. It's a lovely space. Joey, do you have a chance to sit down there during the flight?
Not very often, because on the way there, as you know, there were lots of interviews and stuff going on in that area. But on the way back, I did get to spend a bit of time in there all by myself because everyone else had gone to sleep. And I tell you what, it really does have the wow factor. You know, there's a gold-plated chandelier on the ceiling. There's all these little kind of twinkling LED lights, like you're looking at the stars, you know, all around the area. The sofa's super comfortable, and then you've got this massive 32-inch touchscreen monitor in front, which you can link up to. I think several people can link up to it with their Bluetooth headsets, so you can sit and watch a movie, you know, with your friends and family if you're all privileged enough to be travelling in upper class together. And I think the big change here is the fact that they've now certified that area for seatbelts. So if there's a bit of turbulence or the seatbelt sign goes on for some reason, you don't have to get up and go back to your seat. You can stay there, carry on having your movie night, or as someone suggested, a silent disco. I was really hoping that happened on our flight and it so didn't, damn it. You know, but you can stay in that area and you can carry on enjoying your experience rather than having to hop up and go back to your seat. So I think it's an incredible thing. And I think it's much more appropriate than a bar in this day and age where, you know, it's a, you can still get a drink, but it's not like perching on stools around a bar, which not many of us do in our spare time anymore anyway.
Right, exactly. I had a chance to chill out there in the morning. You know, I sort of got up after breakfast and had my fourth and fifth cups of tea, just sort of chatting with the crew and chatting with other people on the flight. And it was a really great space. They've done a smart thing in that the galley is immediately behind it. And that's really clever because that means that the crew are still there, that you can still sort of chat with the crew and they can see whether you need a drink on the way past, et cetera, et cetera. But you're not sort of in a space that's going to be needed for the service. And that was part of the problem with the club kitchen, particularly on the overnight where, there was just some stuff left out and not enough glasses and not all the right sort of glasses. Like, so there were water glasses left out, but no wine glasses, even though there was wine out there and wine in the fridge. The snack selection on BA was, it was some, you know, a bit of Cambry's chocolate, and some crisps. I mean, not the sort of innovative, thoughtful snack experience a lot of other airlines use. And it's just a bit grey. You know, and I hate coming back to this sort of and whinging about the CMF, but actually CMF is important, and that wow factor that you're talking about, Joe, it's equally important because you've got to have that something to say you're on this airline, right?
And everyone passes through that area, you know, whether you're upper, premium economy, as you're boarding, everybody gets that wow factor, which I think is really clever of Virgin, actually.
Totally. Now, having said that, it's true, of course, that these aircraft are also potentially intended to go on to work for Iberia, I don't know if you noticed, Tom, all the BA planes outside the seating area, all of the placards are in both English and Spanish.
Yeah, you know, I didn't actually notice that myself. I noticed a lot of other things, but that was not on the list, unfortunately.
So all of the placards and stuff, they are all Spanish, in addition to English. So I guess they could also go off to Aer Lingus, because, you know, IAG is one big happy family. Potentially even Level, who knows? But yeah, I thought that was interesting in terms of the way that IAG is potentially thinking about its future fleet flexibility. So, okay, I'm going to put you to the test now. Each of you, marks out of 10 for the new seat. Joe?
So just for the seat itself and the sleeping experience?
Oh, just the new upper-class product.
Yeah. I mean, as I said in my review on Simple Flying, I think you've got to look at upper-class as being more than just a seat, and it's kind of about the whole experience, you know, the catering, the staff that are helping you. It's the whole thing. And my overall opinion, it's really fun. It's very engaging. It was comfortable. I really loved it. So for me, it's an 8 out of 10.
Tom, what's your thought?
So comparing it to the previous generation of the British Airways Business Suite, it's a huge step up. So obviously, it's got to have a fairly high number, in my opinion. There was a couple of little issues here and there, but again, it was nothing that would make me say I'd rather pick another carrier. You know, I found personally for me, everything was more than enough. And I take on board, like, it's not for everyone, but for me, I'd probably say 8 as well.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I feel like I basically agree with both of you. I think I'd probably do... If it was me, I'd probably give the BA seat a 7.5. And not just a seat, but the BA product a 7.5. Partly because of the sleeping problems, and also partly because of the missed opportunity with the club kitchen. I would normally give the Virgin an 8.5, but I would probably dock a good half mark for this table. And only a half mark rather than, you know, two full marks, because they're already fixing it.
Yeah.
So I think that... If I'm comparing these two products overall, I would much rather fly the Virgin product again than the BA one. And because the problems with the Virgin product are problems that are being fixed or that are fixable. The problems with the BA product, I think, are products that you can't really fix at this point, right? I mean, ignoring the door thing, because that's a very specific set of questions. But, you know, just the fewer number of sleeping positions that I found myself comfortable in. I feel that knocks it off. But it's also interesting.
No tail cram on BA. Let's just point that out. And for any av geek, that's so important.
I mean, yeah. There's so much on the in-flight entertainment system that you wouldn't even have time to look at the tail cam.
Why would you want to, though?
I miss the tail cam. Because there's none of the cameras, and I don't know why this is, none of the cameras have been integrated with the IFE system on British Airways. And that's sad, right? I mean, it was interesting. I was on the flight back, on the Virgin flight back from New York. They'd actually had another aircraft go tech. So the economy and premium economy cabins were full. And what I found was fascinating is, as I did a walk through, the number of people looking at that, at the tail cam in the morning, you know, with their cup of tea, that sort of thing where you're just staring, and you're not staring at a wall, but you're staring at, you know, you're staring into the sunrise over the UK.
Yeah.
And it's all...
I think it's a beautiful thing. It's amazing. And it's, you know, it's all HD and it works perfectly. And you've got a belly cam as well. So, you know, you can literally be flying across London as you're taking off. It's just gorgeous. I love it. I love it. I would never not install a tail cam if I was the owner of an airline.
Well, exactly. And of course, it just as a last little aside, the fact you've got a forward-facing cam under the aircraft also helps when, if you remember, when we arrived in New York, they were parking this A350 in a new spot, and the ground people gave them the wrong place to park in, like the wrong little line on the ground, as it were. I mean, it's all digital now. But they basically, the ground staff parked the plane, too far forwards for the jetway to get to the front door and too far back for the jetway to get to the second door. And so the funny thing was, after sort of 10 minutes of them trying to get the jetway on, the captain's like, no, everyone please sit down again. We're going to be here for a while they figure out this and get us a tug. But we could see the sort of 15 people clustered around the nose wheel sort of look at it going, oh, that is in fact not in the right place.
It was hilarious watching all the shenanigans. And normally you'd just be kind of sat there, the IFE would have gone off, you'd just be getting frustrated. But we were actually having a really good laugh, weren't we, John?
It was pretty funny. Well, we'll end today's conversation on that. Listeners, we hope you enjoyed it and we're always keen to find out what you think. Please feel free to email me at john@runwaygirlnetwork.com with any suggestions. Thanks to our guests. Joe, where can people continue the conversation with you online?
Okay, so find me at Simple Flying, of course. People can email me at joanna@simpleflying.com. Or I'm on Twitter at OJOBAILS, OHJOBAILS.
Super. And Tom, what about you?
So again, you can always find me on Simple Flying. I live there now. So my email is tom@simpleflying.com, or on Twitter, I'm at @Thomas_Boone, B-O-O-N for November.
Super. And as ever, you can find me on Twitter @ThatJohn and everything from RGN on Twitter @RunwayGirl and @RunwayGirlNetwork.com. If you're enjoying these conversations, please leave a rating and review wherever you get your podcasts. And thanks for listening.